Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Atlanta. Padres, four games. First road trip of the season. Then they go to New York. But right now, four games, supposedly. Somehow, I'm sure they'll fit four games in. No one wants the Padres to have to come back to Atlanta because there was rain. But I'll tell you what, in the South, when it says 90%, you can pretty much count it's going to rain like a son of a gun. So we'll see. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. I checked the UT's homepage late last night. I saw that Fernando Tatis Jr., while he isn't with the Padres, still is the story with the Padres. What do you make of what went down last night? Explain to the folks what the latest drama is.
Well, people love Tatis, that's for sure, man. Fernando Tatis Jr. is in the second game of his quote-unquote rehab assignment. You are allowed 15 days, just as if you were hurt, you know, when you're coming back from suspension like he is. So he hits a home run. All is well and good. Then the pitcher who gave it up, don't know his name. He's a AAA pitcher. He's 27 years old. Maybe he's a Giants prospect. I don't know. I'm sorry. But he knows what he's doing. One of Darnay Tripp from one of the local stations at NBC tweeted out a video, something about how the pitcher was going to, you know, tell his grandchildren or his children about giving up a rocket to Tatis. And the pitcher, quote, retweeted it and said, called Tatis a cheater. Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess somewhat to be expected. Right. I guess from a player and from a minor league player, and I don't mean that this kid does not or any person does not have the right to have their opinion. From a pitcher who just gave up the bomb, I mean, I don't know. I didn't check his timeline if he was tweeting before the game about facing the cheater. But, you know, like right, Ryan? Like a little bit to be expected. I think that we'll be interested on the road in particular when Tatis is playing about fans' reactions.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Fernando, he told you in January, Kev, that he was anticipating the blowback all season long, that one of the reasons why he was training underwater, one of the reasons why he was doing this stuff with Joe Musk was to slow down his breathing and his heart rate, in part because he knew he was going to get sort of these slings and arrows on the road, right? So it started now. It started in AAA instead of in Phoenix on fill in the blank,
April 20th, provided the Padres get all their games in before then.
Right.
I don't know if people have really factored that into the decision, by the way. That it's April 20th, but the Padres have to play 20 games.
Right, right. It's going to be in Phoenix probably regardless. But, you know, it's starting now. So my guess is Fernando Tatis probably is less surprised by this than the rest.
Right. I think that's fair. Also, we can't be in Fernando's head. And I talked to him about this a little in spring training. Maybe I'll write about it in the newsletter tomorrow. But he knows it's coming. And, like, he's going to be typical Fernando about it. Do we really know, like, how much it'll bother him that he's out there? Remember, he's in right field now, too. So he's not insulated. He's not at shortstop. He knows that he's going to hear it a lot.
Right.
He says he's going to thrive off it. We don't know, you know, just because these guys make millions of dollars. And, I think this is fair. Will it be a distraction for the Padres? I'm not saying will it be a distraction they can't handle. But, like, it is something guys will be asked about. It is something guys will notice. Mm-hmm. In Arizona, I don't think it's going to be an issue. There generally are as many Padres fans there, and I'm not exaggerating, as there are Diamondbacks fans. Now, I think maybe this year it'd be slightly more Diamondbacks. I don't know. They seem to be an exciting team that maybe people – there's a tiny bit of a buzz, but not anything that'll – there'll be a lot of people from San Diego, a lot of expats also that for some reason moved to Arizona. I don't know why anybody would be silly enough to do that. For those of you not aware, Ryan is a San Diegan who moved to Arizona, is now moving back because he's now the sports editor of the Union Tribune.
But anyway, October through May is why people live.
The second road series is Chicago Wrigley Field, guaranteed for not Fernando will be hearing stuff out there. And sure, on and on it'll go throughout the season. And so, like you said, here was the first shot. And hey, good for us. Put Tatis in a headline. Put somebody from an opposing, you know, team or fan base ripping him in a headline. And hey, good for us. I mean, we didn't create it, but we'll go with it.
It was the top story on a certain four-letter sports network's website this morning. Yeah. The top story, which means Fernando Tatis sells, I guess. I don't know. Kevin, the headline in this morning's paper: rotation doing best to weather no Joe span, a story that you wrote about the Padres starting rotation and really what it did last weekend to save itself or to save the club from having to go make a couple of AAA additions right out of the gate Your first impressions of the first time through the rotation?
By the way, one of the things that has changed in both of our times in the business, this story is far more pertinent to what's going on with the Padres right now. And it is perhaps, you know, as important as anything going forward, right? Like, yes. I don't want to paint it too big, but it's like, you know, I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is going to change the dynamic, the ability to win games. I love watching him play. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. But the starting rotation needs to keep getting innings out of Nick Martinez, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo, needs to get more innings, which I'm sure they will, out of Yu Darvish. They need to weather the storm until Joe Musgrove comes back, either on the 11th or the 16th, anticipated. And then Joe needs to do what he's always done. That was the biggest thing that helped the Padres to the postseason last year, was their pitching depth, the ability of the starters to go deep, to use a six-man rotation for most of the season, right, to save the bullpen. And they're just constantly, Ruben Niebla, Bob Melvin, constantly walking a tightrope during the first series, or I should say they felt like they were going to have to after Blake Snell went 4 1/3. Then, oh my gosh, Nick Martinez goes 7, Wacha goes 6, Lugo goes 7. Oh, this is great. Then Ryan Weathers goes 5, which, by the way, that's about what you expect, yeah, and that's a little bit of part of the issue, right? Because we had to use Hader the last couple days to close, had to use Garcia 2 out of 3. Those guys aren't available. Suddenly, Steven Wilson has to go 2. The next day, Yu Darvish had the weird spring training, only goes 5. Uh-oh, Brent Honeywell has to come back on 2. Tim Hill can't be used. He's been used 3 of 4. Now you get an off day. Okay, reset. Everything's good today. What if Snell only goes 4 1/3 again? Mm-hmm. Now you've got it starting all over again. You don't want to have to deal with this all year.
Sure. Sure. And again, in terms of, you know, they should get Joe Musgrove back. Yu Darvish should build up as he goes. This, yes, may not be as big of a problem in May.
Absolutely.
As it is right now. But it, that's, is a, thing. I mean, maybe lowercase p problem, right?
Yeah, sure. That's it. That's all it is. As we're following this team right now, they are walking this fine line. Mm-hmm. It's everything with the bullpen, right? I mean, baseball is a thin margin game. Sure. So, but everything with the bullpen is like this. Okay, are we going to be okay today? Part of my kind of like exuberance about this topic is letting everybody know how important it was to the Padres' success last year. Right. Now, if their offense does what it's supposed to, which it generally hasn't so far, but right, if it does what it's supposed to, fine. They'll win every game 10-9. No, I'm just kidding. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like, right, they should be fine. But also, as the beat writer, I would assume as some fans, anybody following this team now, we're living on the edge. We're keeping track of these things that could derail this team from being a championship team, mm-hmm, that, you know, could derail them from being a National League West division champion, a playoff team, whatever. I'm not saying that this is one of those things yet, but we're keeping an eye on that. And that's kind of new to some of us, I think, right? Like, yeah, we're used to, hey, what does this mean for 2 years from now? Or, oh, hey, we're grateful to be here. Well, no, this is a team that is, I'll tell you what, the story I wrote about, mm-hmm, people in the organization are talking about it and thinking about it and worried about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because they know how important it is.
I'm reminded of what Mark Melancon told you at the end of the 2021 season, basically about the bullpen being. And remember, okay, I mean, that when we're trying to break down why things went wrong 2 years ago, and they had, mm-hmm, a very talented roster, had one of the best records in baseball early on, sent 5 guys to the All-Star game. Right, yep, is the bullpen ran, yep, and all of a sudden, I mean, must I recall Jake Arrieta, yep, or who was Vince the other Velasquez guy? Vince Velasquez, right? I mean, they just ran out of bullets by the, yep, end of the year. And I think that while this team has certainly much, much more talent in the pitching staff and in the bullpen than the one in 2021, you know, there may be a couple of injuries or some problems away from this becoming,
there you go,
kind of like 2021. So
that's all it is. That's all it is. But that is the sort of thing that we spend our time thinking about now because the stakes are higher.
Yes. Because if
it was hard to get worked up about this kind of problem in 2018.
Yes.
But now you can see yourself like, ah, spiraling, like, oh, what's going to happen?
Right.
Not saying that's where we're at, but right, that's, you know, that's the level we're holding this team to now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kevin, we didn't really get a chance to talk too much about this on our last podcast, but I think it's worth diving into. Xander Bogaerts has been Xander Bogaerts, yeah, so far. The first week of the season, obviously, the worst thing you can do is extrapolate small sample sizes out over the course of a season. But Xander Bogaerts showed right away why so many pushed to sign him and gave him the contract they gave him. What have you seen from him in person?
Just a guy who is a pretty darn good hitter. And when he hits the ball, it's not like even like max effort. He's just a natural like hitter. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there's something to the relaxation factor. Now, it turns out that all of his home runs would have been home runs at Fenway Park. Okay. I don't know how that other one got over, but according to StatCast, every one of the home runs he's hit would have been a home run at Petco Park.
Okay.
But he has talked about how there isn't that wall out there, mm-hmm. right? And he thought that one today, even though StatCast said it would have been a home run, mm-hmm. he thought that one on Tuesday would have only been a double or a single. I don't know how many games you've watched at Fenway Park.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of balls off the wall that then bounce back in towards second base, and the guy's held to a single. Like some mm-hmm. rocket he hit at 114 miles an hour, right, at the 25-degree launch angle that was a single.
Right.
So it can help you right. get wonderful, you know, hits, take away outs, get doubles, but it also takes away home runs. And so just the relaxation factor of, hey, cool. If I had a good ball here, I got me a home run.
Right.
Well, he got three of them in the first six games.
Yeah. He's thoughts on him in the field.
Not great.
Okay.
But you know, I watched Ha-Sung Kim last year. Jake Cronenworth is an excellent shortstop. Tatis prone to errors, but he made a lot of really good plays and was smooth out there. Mm-hmm. I'm only holding this now to a level of a $280 million player, right. a guy who's going to be here for 11 years. He's not going to play shortstop for 11 years. Right. He might not play shortstop for 3 years.
Right.
But it's been a little clunky. Okay. And there's some range issues, which you knew. So I don't know that, I mean, your question is valid and we should keep an eye on it. I don't know that we need to belabor it all year that, oh, well, Xander Bogaerts didn't get to that ball. Right. Okay, you're right. He's your shortstop. How many home runs has he hit? How many doubles has he hit? He, I think, is very cognizant of the word on him as a defender because he talks a fair amount. He slips it right into conversations and interviews about how important defense is to him.
Right.
But he also has acknowledged you're an elite player based on what you do offensively, and he's correct about that.
Right. Padres history is filled with guys who were great with the glove and couldn't hit. And where did that get him?
Golly, I loved me some Freddie Galvis. Really did. Oh, my gosh. And pitchers loved him.
Yes.
But you know what they like even more? A three-run bomb.
Yeah, that's a great point. Somebody who is playing because of Fernando Tatis' suspension is David Dahl. He got the full big league baseball player experience the other day, didn't he?
Man, a high that not many experience, right? Like,
right.
Imagine that. New to a team, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of arguably the 26th guy, the last mm-hmm. guy to make it, right?
Sure.
There's debate within the organization. Should it be Taylor Colway based on the kind of at-bats he gives you and he doesn't strike out? And you know what? He's probably going to be coming off the bench or, you know, we want a guy who's going to put the ball in play. Okay. Dahl strikes out a lot. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he knows this. And home run. To tie the game in the ninth inning, pitch Saturday. Hit home run, and then they walk it off. What a great high. The next day, 0-for-4, was it 0-for-3? Because he did get pinch hit for by Rougned Odor. Also a left-handed hitter, so it wasn't a platoon thing. It was, hey, you know, let's see what Odor can do here late in the game. And also a bad route, which was what's interesting about it and credit to him for talking about it, for wearing it, and also explaining it. It really looked from the jump like he had this ball. Mm-hmm. And then and it looked like this, but he explained afterward when I asked him about it. He second-guessed himself, and you could see it out there. He stopped, and then he had to alter and get to the ball, and then he had to slide, arguably had to slide, and tried to catch it, and it went off his glove. That went from being the third out and zero runs mm-hmm. in the sixth inning, changes the game to a two-run double. Nabil Crispat is on the mound. He's already getting kind of messed with by the umpire, telling him to slow down. He has an automatic ball. He wants to hurry up for the next batter. Next batter, he's down 1-0 because, he was 0-1, and then he got to 1-1 because of this automatic ball because he didn't let the batter get set. Then he walks that guy, gives up a single to the next guy. Three runs in that inning. They're within 5-4, the Diamondbacks are, and they end up winning 8-6. Huge game, arguably biggest. He was the GOAT. Mm-hmm. So from one of the heroes to one of the GOATs for David Dahl. The fact that Odor started in right field, Dahl in right field, Azogar in right field, look, that's awesome. What a great story. Even just making this team as an infielder, Rougned Odor. Mm-hmm. Then they got him playing in the outfield, right?
Mm-hmm.
that tells you where they're at that position and how much they are looking forward to, you know, game number 21 or what have you.
Sure. In that case, do you think it's maybe it's too soon to speculate? Again, small sample size. Do we think that Tatis replaces Dahl or that Tatis replaces Odor?
Small sample size, but at this point, Dahl.
Okay.
Last guy on, less versatility. Mm-hmm. Odor gives you that nice bench at bat, right? Mm-hmm. Like he can draw a walk. He's going to put the ball in play, and you put the ball in play, much better than striking out. At this point, it's pretty clearly David Dahl. And you know what? He's probably aware of that too. I'm not trying to say that he's like thinking about that all the time, but like there's a guy who's thinking about that, right? And that just factors into what a great night Monday and less than 24 hours. What a crappy day. What a crappy feeling for him.
Crazy. Baseball's the one sport where, man, within 24 hours, you can be both. Pods are in Atlanta, four-game series, a couple strange TV spots in there. There's one game's on Apple TV Plus. Another one is Sunday Night Baseball, which is a rarity for the Padres. Kevin, what have you seen from the Braves so far? How do you see this series?
They got some really good players. I have not seen a play yet. I've seen some highlights on Twitter. So the pitching matchups first. Blake Snell tonight, Spencer Strider. Don't know who the Braves pitcher is tomorrow. It's Nick Martinez. This is basically the Thursday, Friday, Saturday from last week.
Sure.
Nick Martinez on Friday. Then Charlie Morton for the Braves on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Michael Wacha on Saturday. Seth Lugo will face rookie Dylan Dodd, one of the top prospects, won his first game for the Braves this last week. This is a great road trip, man. Well, it's baseball, all right? Mm-hmm. As far as football goes, the Padres are in the second quarter of their first NFL game.
I love that.
Basically. So they're six games in. Yeah. Like, this isn't even like, I mean, just, but Braves and Mets, man, 201 win teams. Mm-hmm. Braves are the World Series favorites at 14.2%, or they were at the start of the season, according to Fangraphs. Padres second at 10.something%, which, by the way, tells you what, you know, being a favorite at 14.2% chance of winning the World Series tells you how difficult baseball is. Mm-hmm. And how perilous it is the Mets just got swept. They're going home. I love Buck Showalter. Man, does he know how to play the media and the fans in New York. Mm-hmm. His quote yesterday after they lost in Milwaukee, they're going home to play their home opener. He goes, "We're looking forward to seeing some friendly faces, I hope."
Oh, that's good.
He knows that they're just as likely after all this buildup for the Mets season, how excited now with the injuries they've had and the start to the season, they could be being booed by the top of the first.
Wow. In terms of superstars, Kevin, you're going to see some of baseball's best here in the next week or so. As a reporter, I mean, that must be exciting. Better to watch.
This is what I do. This is what I live for. There's a lot of, I want to make sure that we're clear from the top. If no one's ever listened before, it's important to me that people know I'm not complaining. But there's a lot of stuff you do that's monotonous. Mm-hmm. The baseball season is a grind. I won't be nearly this energetic, or if I am, it's because, you know, I've shot myself up with caffeine, like literally in the vein. I'm kidding. By September. But you put up with it all. This is what I tell people. Like, you put up with some interesting personalities. You put up with the road. You put up with all of the stuff because of what you just mentioned. I get to watch the best players in the world play baseball. So for what I used to call 3 hours, now for 2 hours and 40 minutes a day, I get to watch the best players in the world play baseball. And it's the greatest thing. And it's why, no matter what, I am grateful that the Padres have the players they do, because these players have made those 2 hours and 40 minutes I spend, you know, 150 times a year, because I don't do every game, but they have made those hours enjoyable. They have made what I write and talk about more compelling to the people who consume it. I'm just so grateful to be able to do this.
Right. I still don't know how you do the road stuff, man. I was in Houston, Texas for 5 days and was ready to be home.
Well, you know how before we got on, we had a technical issue and I kind of snapped about it? Yeah. And this is the first road trip. What I have to do is constantly remind myself of what I just spoke so passionately about. I get to watch baseball. Someone pays me to watch baseball. Calm down, Kevin. It will be okay.
Fantastic. You said before the season started that should the Padres go 7-0 in their first or 6-0 in their first two series? No. You said, should they go 4-2? Yeah, they're 3-3.
They should have gone 4-2. You could, if you go back and you don't just look at end of games, you look at beginning of games. They cost Nick Martinez, Manny Machado did, and Juan Soto did a couple runs early on in his start. Could they, you know, have won that game? Sure, whatever. But a real letdown there on Tuesday. They should be 4-2. Sure. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they're in the second quarter of the season, right, or the second quarter of the first game of an NFL season. That's just a very easy comparison for me to make, having spent the 15 years covering the NFL and the buildup, and every week was just with wins and losses. And then, I did baseball back in the 90s, and that was a shock to me. Now coming back to baseball, you got to get used to. It's cool. But what I do see, and Jay Cronenworth alluded to it, was it Friday night? I do see an urgency. I don't know that it was as bad as he stated it, but that he said that you can see it. You're standing right here. It's after they lost the first two. He's like, you know, it's like we lost like a playoff game. I don't know if it was like that, but the fact that, you know, it was. I mean, there is an urgency within the confines of these veteran players understanding there's 162 games, them understanding there's probably 7-8 teams going for 6 playoff spots. They're understanding they're going to be fine. There's still this desire by this team, based on what happened last year, that they want to be doing this. For those watching, I'm kind of running my hand up slowly on like a graph where they're ascending versus last year was up, down, and then September 15th on up, right? Like this steep, oh, wow, this is the Padres. They want to establish that this, again, for those not watching and listening later, it's a slow arc up. That's who the Padres
were. Fantastic. Kevin, enjoy Atlanta. Stay dry. I'm fascinated about the travel stuff here. So permit me. Do you bring an umbrella? Which weather apps do you trust? How much stock do you put in the weather forecast a week out? What do you pack?
Well, 10 days before I leave, I very faithfully add the cities I'm going to my app so that I can check and I know what to pack. As far as rain, like I have sat and watched a radar, right? And seen nothing, right? First off, kid from Southern California, when he starts traveling, has to learn how to read radar because we don't care. We don't know, you know? And you see that it's going to rain and then it doesn't. So I don't, whatever. If they play, they play. But I always have to be like, right now I have to be thinking, if they don't play tomorrow or Saturday, what is going to be my story to fill in?
Right. Right.
Or what? Because I got to have a story for the paper for sure. And I got to have stuff for online. And so you're trying to think about that. Yes. I usually bring my tiny little travel umbrella to fit in my carry-on because I do not check bags. Cause if you check bags, then you're an amateur. But guess what? Like I even remember seeing it. Like I saw it 12 times on my while I was packing, and I did not put it in my bag. So I have no umbrella. Now I'm worried about which shoes I'm going to wear because you don't want to ruin your shoes, especially on the first trip. Yeah, because when it rains here, folks, well, this winter, I understand we got some serious rain, so it's different. But when it rains here, like it can rain in 15 minutes in Atlanta as much as we get all year. Like it's incredible when it pours here. And so I have had many, many shoes ruined. Don't know how to get around that. But anyway, it's going to be fun. Atlanta was one of the worst experiences that I had in terms of covering the Braves last in 2021. I mean, the radar was black and it was pouring buckets. There was a police officer out on the warning track, helping the grounds crew with a shovel, but they dig a hole to help with the drainage in the clay. And I mean, they're doing everything they can for 5 hours to play, and they end up banging the game in 2021. And I missed my flight, and I missed my rescheduled flight. It was just like, why are you people doing this? We are definitely not playing this game today. So that's how I know that they are going to do everything possible to get this game in. Now, that said, that year, they were making up games on the road.
Right.
So that Padres and Braves ended up playing that game in San Diego.
Right.
You might remember that the Braves were trying for a playoff spot that they ultimately got and won in the World Series. This year, the Padres, MLB's not doing that anymore. This is not COVID protocols anymore. They get rained out. You've got to find a mutual off day for the Padres to come back to Atlanta.
Jeez.
So the Braves might not care as much. The Padres definitely want to play.
Fantastic. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. Kevin, if it rains this weekend, we will have guest co-host Gary Robbins with us before New York. How about that? He covers weather for us. Anyway, yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.